Hey, welcome back to the Tomahawk Take Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Mastriani, and with me, as always, is Alan.
Good evening.
And Fred.
Good evening, all.
And guys, we are rolling along in the season here. We're almost through the month of May, and really it's just been the same old song and dance with this Braves team the entire year. They're completely frustrating to watch. They'll win a couple, make you think that they've figured something out, and then they'll lose three in a row. It's just a really roller coaster type team. They can't find any kind of consistency. So, I don't really want to talk too much about it tonight with fear of just being too pessimistic. But, I mean, they're coming off a series against the Mets where the Mets did everything in their power to allow them to win that series, gain some ground in the division with all the injuries that they have. Didn't have to face DeGrom, didn't have to face Stroman, and the Braves still find a way to lose that series. So, Alan, it's really just the same thing we've talked about all year. Just can't find any consistency with this team, not beating teams that they should. And that's just a bad recipe for a team trying to win a division and has big, high hopes going into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, too, is that they should be beating teams like the Mets right now because, I mean, in addition to the guys you mentioned, they didn't have Nimmo, they didn't have Conforto, they didn't have Jeff McNeil, who always kills us, and yet somehow, some way, they had just enough offense, the Mets did, to overcome the Braves in two out of the three games, and it was only a walk-off at the ninth inning to save us from the third game. So I'm not real happy about the way that worked, obviously. And now here we come with the Pirates, and that's another team that they should at least take three out of the four games on. And even as we're talking right now, yes, the Braves have a lead. It's 3-2. So it isn't like they're stomping on these guys. Yeah, it's Drew Smyly pitching, but hey, Smiley's only given up two, so that's okay. You think that would be helpful, and the offense should do something. But again, this is where we are. So I'm going to say a word about some of the things that we've been seeing on Twitter. Twitter users have been clamoring for some guys to be called up to add to the offense, and I've got two questions for them. Number one, who do you want to replace? And number two, who do you want to show up? Orlando Arcia, yeah, he's doing great at Gwinnett. Hey, so is Johan Camargo. You know how many hits that Camargo has at the major league level so far this year? Zippo. So if you think that success at the AAA level is going to translate, there's some evidence that it doesn't necessarily do. So you're going to have to be careful about what you ask for, because sometimes you might get it and it may not be what you want. So I'll stop right there for the moment, but the fact is that the Braves are still doing what the Braves are doing, and they're not there's not a lot of help coming, probably.
Yeah, and Fred, we've talked about this. There's just, like Alan said, who are you going to replace? I mean, the players that are out there, if they perform to what we expect them to perform, then this team's going to be fine. They're just, a lot of them are underperforming right now, so I mean, it's really hard to say who are you going to take out if everybody's healthy.
Yeah, it's what I wrote about the other day, is that we've regressed across the field, and the people that you and I expect, well, at least I expected Ozzy to remember how to play baseball when he's standing at the home plate. And so far this year, he hasn't. He's had a couple of hot streaks, but boy, he looks bad at the plate, especially from the left side. Dansby's been struggling. Ozuna still hasn't hit his. When we were looking for Heredia to come back, saying to add some pop to the lineup, that tells you all you needed to know about this lineup.
Right.
And typically when a team does that, when the people who had a career year sort of slide back to their norm, other people step forward and you keep getting to go on like that. But they not only slid back to their norm, they went way past that. And the only one really dependable is Ronnie and Riley right now. And Riley's hitting to something like a 460 BABIP right now, which we all know from watching Chris Johnson is unsustainable. And he's going to come off that mountain at some time. And the question is whether he can plateau at some kind of reasonable 330 or 340 BABIP and still be the guy and deliver the power. But if he, you know, they moved him up finally ahead of Dansby. Now they have to jump him over Ozzie and get him in that fourth hole. And then we might as well move Heredia up because he was hitting, or at least he was a couple of days ago, and do it that away. But the lineup is just, it's just so frustratingly inconsistent. Swanson hits, gets two hits, and then he looks like he hasn't swung at a baseball in 3 years. I don't know what to do about him except to say, it's got to get better because, man, it can't get much worse. And the bullpen's not been that bad. You know, I mean, Smith had a bad outing, but Luke Jackson's been pretty good. They screamed at A.J. Minter after he struck out the first two men in the inning. And man, and then he threw the ball away, and it got in his head. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell him about this. Snitker said tonight, look, we've got to just send them out there and play. They're big boys. They're not going to get any better sitting on their bench. They're not going to get any better going out. Send them out, let them play, and they'll play their way through this one way or the other.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I have to interject here because we have to have a moment of recognition. Drew Smyly now has a Major League base hit.
Yeah, it's his first one since 2009. Oh.
I thought it was the first one, period. But
oh no, he had a hit with an RBI in 2009 mm-hmm. or 2010 when he was with the Pirates. Okay. So
they were calling for the ball. I did see that. It was an infield fielder, but hey, they count. So there you go.
Yeah.
Please carry on. Resume your normal programming.
Yeah, pitchers are trying to make sure they get their hits in this year because it could be the last opportunity that they get. And so Braves pitchers have done actually a pretty good job this year of hitting the baseball. But back to your point.
Some of the players.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Maybe they should be starting every day. But to Fred's point, I mean, that's kind of where I am too, and the kind of the point I was making is, you know, for better or worse, this is the lineup the Braves have. And you just have to keep running them out there and hope that they play to their level that they're capable of. I mean, the talent is there. We've seen it. And, you know, we know it's possible. It's just up to them to get the job done. And, you know, we've had some surprises. You talk about, you know, there was going to be some regression and you're hoping that other players step up. You know, coming into the season, we were looking at Riley and Swanson, and Riley has pulled his weight. He certainly stepped up. When you talk about Dansby, he hasn't, but at the same time, you know, Ozuna and Ozzie haven't, you know, they've not only have they not been at just their norms, you know, not asking them to do what they've done in the past. Certainly, you know, we knew what Ozuna did in a short sample in 2020 wasn't possible of being repeated, but you know, he hasn't even been to his career averages. So, you know, you get them up to their career averages, you know, Riley probably regresses to the mean a little bit. Freddie, you know, gets his average back up there. The power numbers and stuff are there. And Ronnie, you know, being Ronnie, I mean, I think this lineup is close. I think it's, you know, can get there. And William Contreras has been, you know, a really good injection into this lineup. He's brought some thump as well. So I really like having him in there. Wish he would have been there from the start. But we are moving past that now. And Heredia, I mean, been a nice surprise. So I think this offense is close. But, I mean, like Fred said, and like we've talked about in the past, it's just an inconsistent type of offense. You know, even last year, you know, there'd be games where they'd run into a couple of home runs and they're going to put up big numbers. But when those home runs don't come, they're just not going to score a lot of runs. And that's just the way this offense is built. And it's frustrating when it's not going well, but it's really exciting when it is.
I think Ozuna needs somebody behind him. It's not protection as such. But I look back at Ozuna's bats, and he's never been the guy to hold the lineup. He can carry you for a couple of weeks if he gets hot, but he's never been the guy in the lineup. Says, okay, team on my back. He had Yelich, he had Stanton, and in St. Louis, he had other players around him, and he was horrible during the season in St. Louis. But during the off season at St. Louis, he came alive. Everybody else came alive, and I think if the people behind Ozuna pick up, you'll see Ozuna pick up. Until that time, I think he's trying a little too hard sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I'm with you. I think Ozzie is kind of the key to this whole thing. If Ozzie can, you know, hit like he's capable of, then, you know, you can stick him behind Ozuna. And I think he, you know, provides some protection there. But to this point, Ozzie has not been able to do that on a consistent basis. So, I know he was your key coming into the year, Fred, and I still, you know, I think that he is even more so now especially with Travis d'Arnaud not being there. And it, even with TDA being there, I mean, with a catcher, you're not going to play every day, so it's not that consistent protection in the lineup. You know, maybe if Austin keeps hitting like he is and provides a little bit more power, you could stick him, you know, in there, and maybe he adds some of that protection. But I really think Ozzie's probably the key that they're looking for, Alan.
Yeah, I do agree, because you know, with Ronnie up front, you're not going to get a lot of guys up in front of him, although we just blew a scoring opportunity, which that did happen. You need a guy like Ozzie to get on base, to allow Freeman and Ozuna something to knock in. And for the life of me, I'm frustrated that we can't get anybody consistent enough to be that on-base guy in the two-hole. And that's been part of the problem, because we've got essentially the same lineup we did last year, but things are different. And we can certainly debate what's different, but the bottom line is it's just not getting done.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think they're far off. I think they're actually getting close to getting back to the lineup that they were last year. So I'm not as concerned with that. I know a lot of concern comes around the bullpen. I know Fred touched on that, and I don't think they're as bad as probably the Twitterverse makes it seem, but they also are a big reason why this team continues to struggle and lose games late. You know, for whatever reason, you know, there is a lot of bad luck in there. A lot of it's self-inflicted with the errors from, you know, Minter the other night, and Webb hasn't helped himself out. But Shane Green should be coming on the way. Again, I know he's not really going to be, you know, all that is needed. I think there's something better than him that's going to have to happen, but that probably won't come till the deadline. But I do think the bullpen is still a question mark and something that has to be addressed and needs to be improved. And it's just another area too where guys need to step up and pitch like they're capable. I mean, that's really just the theme of this Braves team in general, is players just aren't stepping up and getting the job done like we know they're capable of for whatever reason. I don't know what that is, but, you know, again, we're a quarter of the way through the season now. It's time to get things going, time to really pick it up. Next, I wanted to, you know, move away from the Braves again. We've kind of, you know, gone over the same thing week after week now, because it really is the same thing with this Braves team. But looking at perspective of the entire league, we really have I know the word pandemic has been used a lot here lately, but almost have a pandemic of no hitters here in Major League Baseball. I believe we have five already on the season. I know we've had a couple of other close calls. Corey Kluber is the latest this week with the Yankees. Alan, is this good for baseball, all these no-hitters that we're having?
I think his was number six, in fact. Of course, I'm calling it 6.5.
Yeah.
With the the one that Madison Bumgarner had against us. But I was skeptical to go there for a while, considering that no hitters can just sort of pop up at any point, really, and you could call them a statistical anomaly. But when you get this many in this short a time period, and now almost daily, it seems, you kind of have to say there's something else going on here. And I still think that there is something with the baseball that is causing problems, because again, hitting is down league wide. It's down significantly. The worst batting averages we've seen since 1968, and there's a couple reasons for it. Of course, number one is people continue to swing for the fences and not have a decent two strike approach or anything else like that. But the other problem is that something seems to have changed that is allowing pitchers to maybe get a little more spin, maybe a little more movement, and guys are coming out of the woodwork with getting these no-hitters that normally we wouldn't see, I don't believe. So if this continues, we're going to probably see 20, maybe. I mean, is it possible to get that many? That's kind of the pace we're on right now, which is ludicrous. And I got to think that there's something going on with the baseball that's different. And this is where I get a little pet peeve in that, you know, we want to have baseball consistent from era to era as much as we possibly can. So what do we have? We have steroid era where the offense goes nuts. We have a dead ball era way back in the early 1900s and before where nobody was hitting because the ball was simply going as far. We had last year and the year before, I think, where the ball was sort of bouncing out of the stadium like crazy, and we have record numbers of home runs. Why are we screwing around with a baseball? Why can't we make it the same every year, doggone it? So that people like us can look at stats from one year to the next and see, hey, this looks equal, or this guy would have played well in this era, and he also would play well in our era, that kind of a thing. And yet this is becoming impossible to do because we've got humidors. We've got, you know, baseballs being wound differently. We got seams being raised in places, and all of that changes the game. And I'm a purist in that I like a well pitched game as well, but I don't like artificially well pitched games either. At same time, I like offense. I don't like artificially induced offense from steroids. So I think that we need to just stop messing around, stop experimenting, and just go with the consistency as much as possible in the equipment that's being used. And I'll stop my rant there.
Yeah, no, it's a good one, and one I'm certainly on board with. I mean, why do you keep messing with things? Like, I get it. The players change. They're bigger now. They're stronger now. You know, you have so much technology with pitchers that they're, you know, able to figure out how to manipulate the baseball and control the spin and all that. But that's just progression of the game. I don't know why they have to continue to make changes to combat that. But I definitely feel like something has changed. I don't know if the baseball is the culprit, but this is just, I don't think it's great for the game. Personally, I'm a numb to no hitters at this point. I mean, you look at the list of pitchers who've done it: Joe Musgrove, Carlos Rodon, John Means, Wade Miley, Spencer Turnbull, Corey Kluber. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't mean as much to me right now. Now, if I'm one of those pitchers, I'm gonna take it, and I'm gonna put it on a wall and let everybody know I threw a no hitter. But Fred, I gotta think something, whether it's in the baseball or whatever it is, that has really helped out the pitchers. I mean, I've watched a lot of games too, and there's so many balls just dying at the track that I thought were gone off the bat. So I tend to think that baseballs are the culprit here, Fred.
Yeah, let's clarify what happened with the baseballs, okay, in the broader context. As the company found better of drying the baseball, drying the leather that went on the baseball, they made it smoother. It wasn't on purpose. It wasn't something they tried to do. It's just that the modern techniques of drying the leather and preparing it to go on the ball that they used because it was more efficient and they could get it done, made the ball fly faster, made it smoother, and therefore reduced drag. The other thing that happened is the coefficient of restitution of the baseball, there's a middle point, and there's a variance on each side of it that the ball can be within specs. Over time, that coefficient of restitution increased because the winding on the ball was slightly tighter. It was still within parameters for the ball, but it was getting closer to the upper edge of the parameter. when they had readjusted the baseball this year, all they did was release the winding on the inside so that the coefficient of restitution returned to closer to the center. It's still about 0.6, or supposed to be 0.5, but it's really close to the middle point, which is where it should, where it was all those years before technology improved things to make the ball fly harder. Now, I haven't looked, I haven't heard any complaints about the seams being too high anywhere, but maybe I missed that because I don't read everything. But I haven't heard pitchers complain, and I haven't heard the hitters complain, and I haven't heard anybody say, well, it's making the ball break an extra 2 inches or anything. Most of the stuff I hear about the ball, to change the ball, is better mechanics in the pitchers, better release points, knowing where to put pressure, and the pitchers are just getting better. The other thing is that, and Mark DeRosa made this point the other day, when your average speed of the fastball has jumped from about 92 to near 95, and you've got people rushing it up there at 97, 98, you've got to decide to go early. And at the same time, these guys still haven't learned that launch angle is not mean swinging up on the ball. So what you have is more people striking out. And when they hit them, they either pop them straight up, go over the top of them, or they miss them. So I think that there's the, that's the pro, that's the baseball issue from my point of view. Now, these no hitters, it's horrible for the game because, frankly, most of the pitchers didn't earn it. I heard Ronnie Darling, the other morning talking about this, and he made a perfect point. He said, look at the lineup of every team in the game. And your lineup used to have guys who got on base, guys who put the ball in play, they'd bunt, they'd steal a base. They were just the, they were the Nick Madrigal kind of hitters, the Tony Gwynns. They got on base and they caused things to happen when they got on base. And then you had big guys coming up and you couldn't, you could, had to plan for different kinds of batters through your lineup. Now, 1-9, you got the same batter. They're all up there with the same swing, trying to do the same thing. They're unbuttoning their top button and going for it. And they don't care as much if the team gets no hit because they don't change their approach to do it. You talked about changing your two-strike approach. When Chipper Jones played and Andrew Jones played and David Justice played, if they were getting no hit, they were going down the bench saying, guys, move around. Watch this. Choke up on that bat a bit. Let's put the ball in play hard. Let's get a hit off of this guy because that's going to change his game. Today, you don't see anybody saying that. You don't. They don't. You don't see them trying to do it. You don't see them laying down the bunt. You don't see them choking up on the bat, poking the ball the opposite way. Some of them don't know how, and some of them just don't care. They don't think to do it because they haven't done it for years. So your lineups are top to bottom. You pitch the same guy, pitch the same way to the number one hitter. You do the number nine hitter. You give him cheese at 97 above the lineup. Throw him a breaking pitch that falls out of the zone at the bottom, and you're going to get most of them that way. And that's why the league's average is 235 instead of 255. You just don't. You've got homogenous hitters. Exceptions, of course, there's Acuna and Tatis, but the lineups in general are that away. That's what's caused the no-hitters, and they're making it easier on the pitcher, and pitchers are going to do what's easy.
Strikeout rates per game are almost 9 now. That yep. is a record territory, which would break the record set in 2019, and the rate in 2020 was right behind that, and the rate for 2018 was right behind that. You get the idea. Every one of the top 10 strikeout rates are in the last 10 years. And in fact, I said it's almost 9 now, right? Just go back to 2010. The rate crested 7 for the first time. So in the last decade, we've increased the strikeout rates per game by 2 per team. That's a huge amount.
Yeah, and with that doesn't come a lot of action. So I don't know, for fear of sounding like the old, you know, get off my lawn type of guy, which, you know, even though I don't want to really get that moniker as this type of podcast, but I don't like where the game of baseball is, just honestly. You know, the style of play you know, all the strikeouts, not putting the ball in play. Again, I'm going to get killed for this on Twitter, I know, but I watched the Royals play the other night. They bunted on back-to-back batters, and guess what? They scored a run out of it and got another run out of it because they bunted. I don't get it. I don't understand. Like I understand bunting is not cool, and you know, you don't want to sacrifice the opportunity to hit a three-run homer, but sometimes you got to change things up. And the Royals are a different type of offense. They have to rely on some of that in order to score runs. But there's just no strategy from managers to switch things up to try to manufacture runs. It's like Fred said, every batter's going up there with the same mindset, no matter the situation, no matter what's going on. They got one thing on their mind, and that's to try to hit a ball as far as they can. And that's it. And I just think that's terrible, a terrible brand of baseball. You know, maybe the kids love it. Maybe the sport's growing because of it. I don't know. And if it is, that's certainly great. But, you know, I'm entitled to my opinion as well. And I'm just not a fan of that type of baseball and where the game is going with all of that. Speaking of that, another incident that happened involving the Chicago White Sox that has got a lot of attention. White Sox are up like 15-6 or something against the Twins the other night. So the Twins put a position player on the mound, and in a 3-0 count, Yermín Mercedes launches a ball coming in at like 45 miles an hour for a home run. And this had everybody in an uproar, or at least it had Tony La Russa, the White Sox manager, in uproar and upset the Minnesota Twins. I know there's differing opinions about this, so I'm talking now, so I'll give mine first. If Yermín had a take sign, that's one thing. I know that was La Russa said that. I kind of doubt that was actually the case. But if you had a take sign, that's one thing. That's disregarding your managers, you know, and not doing what they asked you to do. If he didn't, then it's fair game. I mean, you decided to put a position player on the mound. You know, live with the consequences if he gets taken deep, and don't be upset about it when that happens. But that's my quick analysis on it. Fred, I'll go to you first on it, get your thoughts on the situation.
I think we're in exactly the same place. And I said this on Twitter the other night, if the managers told you, look, we're killing them, let's not swing 3-0. Let's not make them look bad. We're here. We want respect. Let's give them a little respect and not swing 3-0. If he said that and the third base coach reinforced that and the kid swung, then he needs to be talked to. That's the first part. The second part is you don't talk to him. You don't say it on national television. He wants the player to take responsibility for what he did. And this is coming from a guy who flashed his World Series ring to try to get out of a DUI. By the way, his second or third DUI over the years. And that's not a guy that takes responsibility for what he does, quite frankly. He shouldn't be managing in the first place. I lost all respect for Tony La Russa when he came out of the Hall of Fame and took this job, because when you're in the Hall of Fame, you shouldn't be managing. You can advise. You can assist. You can be a special advisor, a special coach. You can do all kinds of things, but stay off the field. You're done. You've got your plaque. Quit. And La Russa started this off. There's rumblings that he's lost the clubhouse. Well, the White Sox are still winning, and generally you don't win a lot if the team doesn't get along with the manager. Now, I'm certain they're upset with him, but I just thought this was – you remember years ago when the catcher for the San Diego bunted in the eighth inning or the ninth inning of a no-hitter, and he bunted for a hit, and the other team were outraged. At that point, I said, he's still trying to win the game, and you're only up by one run. He gets to do what he wants to. If you don't like it, strike him out. But everybody, oh, no, you can't do that. Now they're going just the opposite way. We got to understand, as long as that man's on the mound and I'm trying to win a game, I remember the Indians coming back from like 9 runs down and winning in the ninth inning with their beat 2 years ago. Well, I guess 15 years ago now, a long time. Anyway, I was just thinking Kenny Lofton was on that team, so never mind. But if you can come back from 9 runs down, you can come back from anything, guys. And so if you're out there and you put a man on the field and the game's on, it's fair game, unless I tell the player to do that and then he doesn't. So I'm over Tony La Russa. I'm over this argument. And I'm over these people saying there ought to be a mercy rule. These are professional baseball players. They shouldn't be getting beat 15 to nothing. If they're not, if they don't have the ability to play at this level, find people who do. Find people who do, who want to win and aren't going to get beat 15 nothing. When a team gets beat 15 to nothing over and over again, as happened to a couple teams this year, they're not trying. And the reason, there's a reason they're not trying, and it's in the clubhouse and in the dugout. Fix that, get it over with, get it off the board, and play ball at the same level. This isn't Little League, for Christ's sake. Stop. Just stop.
Yeah. Alan, the other part of this too is the idea of putting position players on the mound. When you've done that, you've waved the white flag essentially, right? I mean, we've seen it happen in a Braves game this year. They brought in Anthony Rizzo. I don't like the position player coming to the mound. I think it's bad for the game. I think it's an insult to the game, honestly. I know a lot of fans love it and find it exciting. I personally don't, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. The idea of bringing position players in the mound, out to pitch. I mean, we have every bullpen has a Josh Tomlin in there that can come in and eat those garbage innings. I mean, you shouldn't have to bring in, the Anthony Rizzos, Wilson Castillos of the world and try to mop up these games just to save an inning for your bullpen.
But I like Williams on Astudillo. So There's another aspect to this that does have to be mentioned, and that's the fact that sometimes you do get in a bad position with your bullpen and the usage of your guys out there, and you want to save some arms for the next day or the day after. Perhaps it's also because of what happened the day before, and you really need to save an arm or two. And sometimes it does take a position player pitching so that you can add a little perhaps levity to the situation. Yeah, you're not really taking the rest of the game seriously and such. Yeah, I get that part of it. But at the same time, your team's getting their brains beat in. Stick a guy out there who wants to try an inning and see what he can do, and everybody have a good laugh over it, and then they'll feel better about themselves at the end of the day and come back and be ready to lace them up again tomorrow. So there is that aspect of it that does help a team in a bad situation like that. At the same time, what the Cubs do the other day, they put three different position players in the same inning or something. It's like, okay, one's enough. let's not get silly here and really go crazy here, Dave Ross. You don't need to go that much. I generally would be reticent to use a position player myself unless it really came down to being almost necessary to protect my bullpen from further damage or anything else like that, or maybe the psyche of a young kid who might be thrown to the wolves otherwise. Because, I mean, when you're down 15-0 or something like that, and these things are happening, then you've gotten to the point where the other team is so relaxed, they're practically looking at anybody going out there as throwing batting practice to them. So it's not going to matter who you throw out there from the bullpen. They're going to get hit because the other team is ready, relaxed, and just teeing off on everything they see. So this thing does happen, and there's some reasons, at least some baseball reasons, that I can conjure up here to explain it and justify it somewhat.
Well, there is that, but MLB put in that rule where you had to name your position player who was going to pitch, and that was the point of it, was to stop all of this, and then they relaxed the rule because of the COVID-19 situation, and they left it relaxed for this year. But the roster rules as they were set up 2 years ago before everything went to hell in a handbag was that the team had to decide which position players they were going to be able to use to pitch. And they had to name them ahead of time. And they had to be identified on the roster. And you couldn't use anybody else, essentially. That was designed to stop stop these 4 and 5 and 6 position players from coming into a game and still give them an out.
I understand that, and I like the reasoning behind it, but at the same time, I'm also generally against telling a manager what you can do with your roster or your players in as part of winning a game. That's not what we're talking about here, really, but when you start doing things like saying you can only use certain players at certain times or position them on the field certain ways, I think that gets into a dangerous area, and which is also why I'm not real a big fan of the idea of limiting shifts on the field.
I don't want them to limit shifts either. I did some research for another place I write where the best thing that we could do right now is to actually do something that the MLB came up with, and I'm thinking this is Theo Epstein doing this, is move the mound back a foot. And you say, well, a foot isn't very far, but I calculated that it makes a 96-mile-an-hour fastball look like a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. And if that happens, then you get more hitting and more balls in play. And the pitchers can complain all they want about, you're always doing something for us, you're always doing something for the pitchers, and you're not doing anything for the hitters. I mean, the hitters complain that you're doing everything for the pitchers. But the point of the game is to score runs, and you can't do that when the pitchers are striking out nine people a game and you're not hitting anything, pop-ups and ground balls. If they move the rubber back a foot, just 1 foot, it will take enough, it will give them an extra amount of milliseconds to see the ball and hit the ball. That's the equivalent of dropping the speed 4 or 5 miles an hour. So I thought I would hate that idea, but the math tells me it will work. And so I'm willing to do that because I'm tired of people swinging for the fences and striking out, and just looking pathetic at the plate, when Garrett Cole throws 97 at the letters and they just swing and look like the Garden Gate.
But that might require more position players if there's more offense, more position players pitching.
It's true.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think my position all along is we have too many damn teams with players who don't belong in the major leagues now.
Yeah, that's another whole topic, but I'm on board with that too.
Take the quad A players out of the major league and get rid of the teams that are and redistribute the people around and have teams out there that have real major league talent on them, and you will get rid of that.
Yeah, so we're fixing all of baseball's issues here. Hopefully Rob Manfred is listening here. But I think we've gone kind of full circle on it too. Pitchers are definitely dominating, and it seems like baseball's probably going to make another adjustment to try to flip it back the other way. But again, I don't know exactly what the answer is there. I know I don't love the game today as it is. Certainly love the players, love talent. I watch multiple games every night. Still love the sport, but definitely the direction that the game is going. And I don't know. I'm going to get on another rant here if I keep talking about this. But I put it more on the hitters and just their unwillingness and their stubbornness to adjust to what the pitchers are doing. I think it's lazy on the part of the hitters for the most part. But again, I'm not up there trying to hit 97 that's running in on you. So, who am I to call the hitters lazy at this point? So the last thing I want to talk about just for on the Braves aspect is just a little minor league update. Obviously minor league season's rolling around now. Michael Harris is tearing it up down at Rome. Hitting well over 300. Seems like getting a couple of hits every game. So certainly love to see that. Again, I think he's one of the better prospects in the Braves system. I know he got a lot of praise this last offseason. It's probably going to start shooting up some prospect rankings here. Drew Waters is heating up as well. Got off to a slow start, but he's been hitting the ball much better. Still don't think he's ready to be called up. I know a lot of fans are begging for him to get called up, but Give the kid some more time. Let him develop down there in AAA. I wouldn't rush him up there by any means. And then Spencer Strider, the Braves' fourth-round pick from last year, pitched the other night, went 3 2/3 innings, but struck out 10 batters and didn't allow a hit. Obviously, a lot of teams are being cautious with the innings limits on some of their pitchers, especially pitchers that weren't able to pitch.
So he's making great strides. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, look at that. Look at Fred. And then Shea Langeliers was added to the Baseball America Top 100 prospect list. So he's starting to climb up prospect boards as well. He's down in Mississippi right now, not hitting too great. Well, I shouldn't say that. He's got an OPS over 900. The average isn't quite there, but got a really high OPS. And obviously, we know he's great behind the plate. Possibly could see him next year with the Braves. So some promising things happening down on the farm. But that will do it for this episode of the Tomahawk Take podcast. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate all these subscriptions for the podcast. Make sure that you check out the website, tomahawktake.com, where you can see articles from all of us and a lot of other great talented writers that we have on staff there. And we'll talk to you next week.
This has been the No Rant Ever Goes Unpunished edition of the Tomahawk Take podcast. It's a production of TomahawkTake.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants because Minute Media really doesn't care. All rights reserved. One of the musical selections used today comes to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. This was a piece by Kevin MacLeod entitled Fuzzball Parade. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other selections used come via rights purchased by TomahawkTake.com. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast today, and hey, the Pirates just proved that it does not take a 15-0 score to reach the threshold for a position player pitching. 12-zip will do just fine. But as our own podcast roster is limited, we'll be back out for the next inning. See y'all then.